Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by San Francisco State University's graduate business programs offering 5 accredited advanced degrees, the SF State MBA, rigorous, real-world, respected, open house schedule, and more information at mba.sfsu.edu.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. An Alameda County Superior Court judge has temporarily blocked the release of a much-anticipated report on the UC Davis pepper spray incident. The California Report's education reporter, Anna Tentakulis, has the story.
Images of campus police officers dousing UC Davis students with pepper spray during an Occupy protest last November sparked a firestorm of criticism against the university's president and its police force. A report detailing all the procedural missteps of the incident was supposed to go public this week, but instead, lawyers representing the campus police union temporarily blocked it.
We just want the report to be released without violating these officers' rights to confidentiality.
John Paquette is the union's attorney. He says two sections of California's penal code prevent the personal and confidential information of peace officers from being released, like officer names and what they told investigators. The union will now examine what information should be stripped from the report, but UC Attorney Charles Robinson says the laws the union cites don't apply to this case.
We are fighting vigorously to allow the entire report without any redactions to be published.
The ACLU also supports the publication of the full report. Both sides will file their arguments and make their case before an Alameda County Superior Court judge next week. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis.
California's community college chancellor is retiring. Jack Scott has announced he'll step down in September after 3.5 bumpy years battling state budget cuts and advocating for changes in the 112-campus system that favors students aiming for a degree. Scott is 78 years old, and he says he's ready for a less demanding life in his hometown of Pasadena. But he's sticking it out until the legislative session ends to give the board time to find a replacement. Later today, the State Board of Education is expected to vote on whether to apply for a waiver to the federal program called No Child Left Behind. California is one of a handful of states that has not applied for a waiver because of resistance to some requirements that would require changes like adopting a teacher evaluation system based in part on student test scores. But there's pressure to rethink the waiver coming from another direction. L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa has joined a number of big city mayors asking the federal government to allow them to lobby for federal education funding directly instead of going through the state. California's High-Speed Rail Authority has a new chairman. Dan Richard, a Brown appointee, is now the public point person for the agency, and no doubt he's bracing to take a lot of the political heat over questions ranging from the project's $98 billion price tag to its estimated ridership to whether we should go ahead with it at all.
It's true that there are people who question that. It was incumbent on us to go back to the legislature and say that we've looked at all those basic questions. I believe, having come onto this board as somewhat of an agnostic on the question of high-speed rail, that it, in fact, absolutely makes sense for California, particularly when we look at the growing population, the pressures that that population growth is going to put on our transportation systems, and the cost of building and operating alternatives. Fundamentally, high-speed rail makes sense for California, continues to make sense, and is the right thing to do. We just have to do it the right way.
As far as you understand it, what are the latest cost and ridership estimates?
We're updating the cost estimates, and we wanted to be honest with people about what it would cost to build this over the next 25 years in fully inflated dollars. And that's where the $98 billion number came from. Now, one-third of that cost is inflationary effects. So to the extent that we can build the project more quickly, it's going to cost much less. On the ridership, the shorthand answer is this, that under all the conditions that we can forecast, using very conservative assumptions for fuel cost and population growth and things like that, we generate enough revenue to break even and to operate the system as all these high-speed rail systems are around the world, operating at a profit. And now that's after the capital cost has been expended, and we believe that will be the case in California as well.
So what kind of ridership numbers are you envisioning?
If you look out to 2040, it's about 38 million riders a year, which is actually a pretty modest number compared to similar systems around the globe.
38 million riders a year. That sounds like the population of California.
If you look at France, if you look at Japan, if you look at Taiwan, their annual ridership numbers are close to double the current population figures of those countries. To get to that ridership number, less than 3% of the total trips between San Francisco and Los Angeles that are currently going by car or airplane would have to go by high-speed rail for us to see those kinds of numbers. It's like 2.5%. So that's a pretty small mode shift when you're offering people what is, in today's dollars, an $83 trip in 2 hours and 40 minutes from San Francisco to Los Angeles.
Some changes to high-speed rail's business plan have been mandated by the federal government, including the string attached to federal funds that the first leg of the system has to be Merced to Bakersfield and back. It could be a potential economic spur for the Central Valley, but it also seems a potential existential threat to the success of the entire project.
At this point, I've become convinced that regardless of the federal requirements, that it is in fact the right place for us to start. It is the only place where we can test the trains at their ultimate speeds of 220 miles per hour. We can't do that by putting trains on between San Francisco and San Jose or Los Angeles and Anaheim. The other thing is the shared use of tracks, like on the peninsula. We already know the corridors and the rights of way that we would be using in areas like San Francisco to San Jose or Los Angeles to Anaheim. We don't have any right of way at this point in the valley. And the value of acquiring that right of way is around $400 million. The valley is a very fast-growing part of our state. So the longer we wait to build there, the more difficult it's going to be to acquire the land that we need. The real issue for people has been the concern that if we couldn't get any more funds, you know, what is left there? And that's one reason why we've also been engaged in recent discussions about getting early advanced investments in the Caltrain upgrade and in similar systems in Southern California so that we'll be doing more than just working in the valley, it would be my hope.
Well, thank you for talking with us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Dan Richard is the new chairman of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. You can read more of his interview on our website, californiareport.org. That's the California Report for Wednesday, March 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Mary Van Voorhees Fund and the Follis Family Fund for coverage of climate change, and Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as email archiving for compliance and litigation readiness. Barracuda.com.